everyone. Welcome back to Relevant Talk with Athalia Monet. And today we have Dustin Wagner with us from Paradigm Treatment Center. How are you today, Dustin?
I'm good, Athalia. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining us today. So, Dustin, can you tell us exactly what Paradigm Treatment Center does?
Yeah, so Paradigm Treatment Centers, we provide mental health services in a residential setting for a minimum of 35 days. And we work with clients as young as 12 years old up to 26 years old. And really, we specialize in mental health treatment. So folks struggling with depression, anxiety, trauma, you know, just kind of stages of life stuff, and that kind of the process of turning from an adolescent to a young adult. And and we do that all in a residential setting in California and soon to be Austin, Texas.
Awesome. Awesome. And Dustin, what exactly is your role at Paradigm?
Yeah. My role at Paradigm, you know, I have a unique background in that. It's okay. We hear that a lot. So my role, it's a little unique. I'm the chief operating officer, but my background is I'm actually a therapist myself. So I've spent nearly 12 years working with teens and families, and I love this work. And then I've been doing more of the operations management of the business.
What you all do is so. How can I explain? What you all do for these young people is definitely needed. And for me, I'm a softie, and I can only imagine if I was in your position and in the other therapist's position dealing with these teens who needs help and you are providing these services to them. And for me, I would probably get attached. And my heart would probably... it's slow with love for them and really wanting to take care of them and do the best for them that you can do. What have your experience been like in working with these young people?
Yeah. You definitely have to, you're absolutely right. You grow such a unique relationship with these young people that you get attached, you're rooting for them. You see the light in them that they don't always see in themselves. And, but what's great is these teens and these young adults are so strong, so resilient. And our job really is to, you know, you want to do it for them, but you can't do it for them. Our job is to really just provide the space for them to do the work themselves. And you're alongside there with them. You get to see them with their victories. You get to see them struggle. You know, you get to see them encourage one another. It's a real privilege getting to do this work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's I'm sure you can imagine it's never boring either. But it's fun work that we get to do.
It sounds like it. And it sounds like it's so rewarding. It would be so rewarding for you all because you see, once you get them to the finish line or close to the finish line, it's like your work and you struggling with them wasn't in vain.
That's right. And the goal is always, you know, we work with teens, young adults that are in crisis, you know, on some, mm-hmm. on some form, some version, they're in crisis. They can't function. They maybe don't want to be alive. They've endured something really traumatic. And our goal is always to get them back on their feet, get them skills, help some healing happen, and then see them go home and be safe. They're with us for a month or two. That's not a lot of time, but that's a lot of time for them to get kind of where they need to be so they can be back home with their friends and family. And, you know, we've definitely seen a bigger spike in the need for these services over the last, you know, year and a half for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. And so it's been an interesting last year or so.
I can imagine, especially like you said, for obvious reasons. And I'm only assuming that with some of them, the whatever their situations were already there before COVID, but then it heightened because of COVID, because now we're all in the same house together, and we can't go out and hang with friends like we normally do. We can't do some of the same things that we were able to do before COVID because of safety reasons. And so I'm sure that that heightened whatever issues that they were already dealing with.
Well, it definitely heightened. Yeah, you know, I think it definitely heightened. You know, I think the stigma of mental health has improved over the years, but still the stigma exists. And, you know, it's especially for teens and young adults, you know, they may not know that there's professional help out there. And so, mm-hmm. so oftentimes, you know, they're struggling for a long, you know, months, years before they really raise the red flag and say like, hey, I need some more help, mom or dad. And so I think, you know, as stressful as the last year has been for everybody, I think for teens and young adults, we've seen a spike in mental health because they've been around fewer people, not necessarily even just for that social community support, but really it's other people in people's lives, you know, teachers, coaches that kind of witness like, oh my gosh, that doesn't look good, or that doesn't feel right. I need to say something to that kid or to that family. And so I think because we've had so many teens with fewer eyes on them, there's been less opportunities for appropriate intervention.
Yeah. And you know what, Dustin, I'm thinking, going back to something you said earlier, how you all witnessed them cheering each other on and celebrating each other's wins. I'm only imagining that maybe, I don't know, of course, but maybe the young people that you all have worked with, maybe they are able to take what you all taught them and how you all worked with them at your center and help someone else out, another friend or family member out, who may be struggling, you know?
Oh, 100%. I mean, we see that a lot. We get to stay in touch with a lot of our clients and, you know, for better or for worse, you know, these teens, these clients, these families refer other people to us from their communities, which, you know, that's a really high compliment to us, uh-huh. but it also kind of says that there's so much room in our communities for more resources, more support. And, you know, we're definitely seeing the while there's more of an acceptance and understanding around depression, anxiety, and just mental health, you know, I saw something a few weeks ago that the increase in ER hospital visits has spiked by like 30% for mental health related incidents. So that means that kids and young adults, these clients that we get to work with, their first maybe intervention around their mental health happens in an ER, which is I'm sure we've all at some point had to go to the ER for something, you know, whatever it is. Right. And those are that's not a place to get mental health services. And so
it's not.
So to me, that just says that, you know, there's even more of a need now than ever to, you know, whether it's residential treatment or outpatient services or, you know, testing or psychiatry, there's definitely a demand that we've been seeing.
I can imagine. It sounds like you all are really doing a great job. And I wish that we can have within families and within our relationships, no matter what type of relationship it is, have more open communication about mental health.
Well, and that's a good point, Athelia, because that's a lot of what we do in family therapy. I think, you know, we get to work with these great families that, you know, they want the best for their kids and they're doing their best, but people just don't, you know, we're not really taught and trained, as, teens and young adults how to talk about this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, you kind of have to seek it out yourself, or, you know, be in a family that maybe has gone through something like this, so you learn how to talk about it. So much of the family therapy that we do, and we do a lot of family therapy every week, a lot of it is just helping the family as a whole learn how to kind of deal with and talk about these things in a way that, you know, provides some openness and a little bit more transparency. I think that's a lot of what our clients, you know, one of the commonalities across the board is that, you know, people just want to be understood. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, parents are trying to understand, but, you know, they can't help but try and fix, or they probably know better, and they communicate what they know better. And, right. and that just, you know, inevitably that kind of takes the teen out of that position of being able to kind of do their own work and communicate their own feelings and all of that. So, but back to your point, you know, there's definitely a lot of room for us to have more open conversations about mental health.
All right. Justin, what are some of the treatments that you all offer?
Yeah, you know, what's great about residential treatment is that you get to do a lot. So we do a lot of, you know, the traditional, we do individual therapy every day. We do a handful of groups every day. We do family therapy. But what's great, you know, we have these great locations. So, you know, we're in California right now. And so a lot of our time is spent outside. You know, I think for anybody, you know, adults included, but for teens and young adults especially, like, there's an aspect of play and recreation and community. You know, not everything that's therapeutic has to be sitting between two ferns and talking about problems. And so, you know, we get to exercise, we get to have fun, we do some art, we do a little bit of dance, we do equine therapy, you know, play in the water, you know, whether it's kayaking or surfing. And yeah, you know, so we do a lot of traditional stuff. We do, a lot of our clinicians are trained in EMDR, which is a evidence-based modality for treating trauma. And we've got a lot of folks that have, you know, varied backgrounds, and, you know, we have licensed psychiatrists, licensed psychologists. And so we address things from the medical perspective, from the psychological, and do an assessment and, you know, just, but it, you know, I think really everything that we're doing, and this is what I've learned about this field. I think everything that we're doing is tied to trying to inspire some hope. If, mm-hmm. if someone can kind of come walk the door, go through our program, you know, meet with our psychiatrist, meet with our therapist, and then at the end of the day or the end of that meeting, have a little bit more hope, then you've got some good momentum. So that's really what we're trying to push.
Yeah, because for me, I love helping people out. I love helping out in any way I can in different aspects. And for me, if I was in your shoes, I know that you all have these young people coming in there who probably have what I call like dead eyes. Like they just look like they're existing. And then by the time they finish your program, their eyes are bright and glossy. And for me, that would be so rewarding. It would just fill me up inside, because it's like, okay, we've done our job. You know,
it's beautiful you say that, and it's so true, because, you know, we you know, during the whole process, you know, we're doing assessments, we're tracking outcomes, we're looking at data, and that can show progress, but I'm with you. It's really, you know, for our medical record, we take a photo of our clients day one, you know, just for obvious reasons, but it's really fun to see at the end of the day. It's like, there is a transformation that happens. You said it so correctly, that light is back on. It's like they flip the switch back on. Mm-hmm. And for some of these kids, you almost don't recognize them when you look mm-hmm. at them. We've, We've done a couple before and after photos, which sounds kind of like a makeover, there's a real cool transformation that can happen, I think. I don't get to do too many intakes or discharges anymore because of my role. But that day that parents come and pick up their kids and the kids got their stuff and you kind of say those goodbyes, that's a real special day.
Yeah, you just probably want to give them a high five or a hug or something.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Like, yes, you did it.
Well, and this is not, it's not a linear process, unfortunately, but it is, it's great. We love hearing back from our, alumni or our families. It's nice to hear when people are doing well, and it's, and we also are committed to, we want to help along the journey, just because someone's here for, for a 35 or 60 day stay doesn't, we know that there's no one fix, but, we want to be a program that helps kind of turn that light back on, get some momentum, mm-hmm. get some skills, that's what we're here for.
Let them start back being productive and happy and laughing and smiling and that would be the best feeling, like it's your own child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it takes a special person to work in a program like this too. And so we've got amazing staff who, you have to be inspired by these teens, and they are so inspiring because mm-hmm. they're real, they're authentic. They don't, they call it like it is. And that's really fun. That's fun to be around.
Yeah. Have you all ever had a situation where your 1 month program didn't run for a particular patient, and so you all had to extend it?
Yeah, so what we do is we do a minimum of 35 days, and we work our tail off, and oftentimes, someone does need more time, whether it's another week or two, and so I would say our average length of stay is probably closer to 47 days. And, and that's with the goal of, again, getting somebody back home and back into like an outpatient program. But something that I think is really important for us is that we don't just have an open door policy. Like if you want to come in, we really screen. We do some prior assessments. We look at previous clinical records. We often talk to, the current provider. We do a parent interview. We want to make sure that we're the right fit because, we have a very particular program. We want to make sure that, everybody in the program is the right fit. They're going to be on board for doing the treatment. Our program works best when someone is internally motivated, mm-hmm. For teenagers. I think the common approach is external motivators, rewards, consequences, and that's really not our program. We're really kind of designed to work with that person that maybe doesn't, no one really wants to be in residential treatment, but it's really kind of designed for that person that I don't want to do this, but I know that I need to do this. And that's a lot of what we see is someone that's really kind of tired of feeling the way they feel. And so sometimes, someone needs to stay longer, but we really work hard. There's a lot of work that happens before even someone comes in for treatment to make sure that we are going to be the appropriate fit.
Okay, great. How do you all know, at what point do you all know that the treatment is working? I know some of the ways might be obvious, but is there other ways that you all can tell that the treatment is working outside of the obvious?
Yeah, that's a really good question. There's quite a few different ways. We have some standardized assessments that we do on a weekly basis. We have our psychiatrist meets with all of our clients at least once a week. We have weekly clinical meetings where we kind of run through clients and just, you know, where are they at? What, you know, where are the goals? Are they close to meeting the goals? You know, we're looking at frequency and, you know, things that are measurable. But for me, I think the, you know, I'm always looking at how is the family functioning as a whole in family therapy, and how are the phone calls going? How's the communication outside of, you know, these family therapy sessions? Cause I think we don't cure depression. We don't cure anxiety. That's just not how it works. But mm-hmm. I think what we're good at is like, okay, how do we address these symptoms? How do we help shrink this so it's more manageable? How do we get rid of some old coping skills that weren't working? How do we introduce some new ones? And so, I think someone's ready to discharge when there's a little bit more control over those emotions. There's a little bit more willingness to try some new skills. Communication is improving on both sides with parents and siblings. And I think if you have those things and, you know, that there's some hope, there's some momentum, there's a commitment to safety, then I think it's like, okay, then, you know, more time in residential, you know, the better, because there's so much you can do in a day or a week in residential treatment. But if you have those things I previously mentioned, then home is going to be more successful. And there's a commitment once someone discharges to, you know, you have to keep doing the work. It doesn't just mm-hmm. stop here. So if there's a level of commitment to continuing to work, safety's, you know, there's more of a commitment, communication's improved, then I think someone's ready to go home and, you know, continue the work.
Okay. And so when they continue to work, do they continue to work as an outpatient with you all, or do they continue to work like with a therapist, or is it just something that you all put together for them to continue to work on at home?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, we've launched something in the last year, kind of in response to COVID and just so many being really hard to locate psychological services. So we've actually been offering telecare with our therapist here. So they, you know, there is the option to continue doing individual and family therapy with us. But I would say most of our families work with our director of education and transitional planning. His name is Matt Siegel. He's fantastic. And because we work with families from across the country, you know, Matt partners with the clinical team and the family, and we identify services local to, you know, wherever this family's living to, you know, to get those things set up. Because you know, there really shouldn't be a gap in services. You want to continue that that forward progress. And so, right. So we don't really offer outpatient services other than the telecare that we uh-huh. that we do. And I think right now we've got you know, like a handful of families participating in that, and they can also do, you know, they can also do some skills training with Sienna Walker, who's amazing. But, you know, most families go home and either reconnect with their previous therapist, which, you know, we do, or we work with a consultant, or, you know, just do our research. And because we've been doing this for so long, we have a good, you know, in major cities, we have some good resources that we know are good referrals for services.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Dustin, I know you told us in the beginning about your different locations. Can you give us is it seven locations you all have?
Yeah. So we have five locations in Malibu, California, you know, just outside of Los Angeles. And then, uh-huh. And then we have two locations in San Rafael, which is up north in Marin County.
And then the other one to be opened is in Austin, Texas, you said?
Oh, yes. Good catch. I should definitely mention that. We do. We have I'll get in trouble. We have a program in Austin, Texas that we're looking for that to be online in the fall, maybe early October.
Awesome. You all are, I appreciate you all, just like I'm sure the parents do, because just like adults, the children, they need what you all have to offer. And it sounds like you all are doing an awesome job at helping them. And how can anyone contact you all who would like to use your services or refer you to anyone?
Yeah, that's. I appreciate you asking. You know, we have a great website. So it's paradigmtreatment.com, PARADIGM, treatment.com, and our website's great. A lot of good resources, even if someone's not, you know, looking to maybe even come into treatment with us. But and so there's some links. You know, folks can send just like a form to be contacted. Our phone number's on our website, so folks can call that number directly. And what's nice about our program is, you know, we're still you know, if you call, you're going to get a person that actually works here. You know, we have a great admissions team who, you know, what we all keep in mind is anytime someone's reaching out to us, it's because they are in crisis. And
All
so, you know,
right.
not only are we just, you know, trying to get some information to assess, but, you know, people are calling to tell us their stories, and we take that with seriousness. And so so probably the best thing to do is just, if someone's curious, there's no commitment, just give us a call and we'll talk you through services and what we offer. And yeah, and that phone number is 855-680-1820. But again, our website is a good resource as well.
Okay. And Dustin, that phone number that you just provided us, that phone number can be used any time of the day or night. True.
That's right. Yeah, that's
Okay.
right. And if for some reason, you know, because we're not a call center, we have a small admissions team. If, you know, if for some reason we don't answer immediately, we will call back quickly.
Okay.
But yeah, day or night, you know, and because we work with families across the country, there's, you know, we don't really keep office hours.
Okay, awesome. Well, Dustin, thank you so much for joining us today and for providing us insight as to what you all do, the much needed service. I really, really enjoyed our conversation and hope to get you back on here sometime in the future to share more information and you know with our audience, because this is something that's ongoing and it should be talked about more openly. And it's definitely needed.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time and talking about this subject, and it was really nice to meet you, and yeah, I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.